Days of Trial, Tempest, and Triumph. This week we are to study Mark 4:35 through 5:43, 49 verses in all. And as you study the overview, you discover that this week's lesson has been divided into four sections. Section number one, 4:35 to 41, is Christ's power over tempests. After he had propounded his parables and teachings, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side of the lake." And when they had sent away the multitude, they took Jesus just as he was into their ship. And there were with him other little ships. I love this little touch of Mark. Other little ships. When the ship, the big ship, was it? Larger than the little ships? Was caught in a storm? The little ships were in the storm too. And when Jesus Christ dispelled the storm, and a great peace came, the other little ships had peace also. Jesus Christ was so tired that he fell asleep in the hinder part of the ship, unmindful of the great storm of wind and the waves that Satan stirred up to try to destroy the Master. The prince of the power of the air tried every device he could to destroy Jesus Christ. And here was another attempt to drown Christ. The disciples were used to all kinds of storms on the Sea of Galilee. The lake was their livelihood, but this storm terrified them. They awakened Christ with the cry, "Master, carest thou not that we perish?" He immediately arose and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And there was a great calm. And then Jesus asked the disciples, "Why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have little faith?" Fear and faith he sets in contrast to one another. Christ was trying to tell them that while this trial had come to him, this test to them, this trouble to the other little ships, that in consequence of Satan's attack on Christ also suffered this storm, he was the master. And if they would only trust and rely upon him, victory would be guaranteed. In the second part, Jesus Christ met another fear of the disciples. When they reached the other side, there was a man of Gadara, full of an unclean spirit. He had been ostracized by society, and he lived in the tombs, which in those days were caves cut in the side of the hills. He had parts of chains dangling from him that he had broken, and parts of fetters that could not hold him back. Night and day he was by himself, cutting himself and crying. When the disciples saw him coming toward them, they fled in dismay. But Jesus Christ was unafraid. He saw him, and as the man fixed his eyes upon Christ, he came and fell at his feet and worshipped him. "What have I to do with thee?" the evil spirit cried out. "I adjure thee that thou torment me not." But Jesus had said to him, "Come out." This is an interesting picture of the workings of Satan and the power of Christ. Satan had controlled this man. He possessed him. Later on, the man admits that a legion of demons possessed him, pulling his mind, pulling his body, pulling his activities, his feelings, his desires, in 100 directions at the same time. But somehow in the providence of God, within his soul, the Spirit, the good Spirit, still had some power. The still small voice induced this man to recognize Christ. The scribes and Pharisees failed to do so, but this devil-possessed man, in the recesses of his darkened mind, could still recognize Christ. And as he came, it was with a desire for cleansing. Christ forces himself on no man, not even on the demon-possessed. And because Christ was ready to help him, is an index that this demon-possessed man was responding to the inner voice of the Spirit, was longing for cleansing and victory. The devils besought Christ to be sent into a herd of swine, not to be sent into the lake of fire before their time. The purpose, of course, was satanic. Having drowned the swine, the devils hoped that the feelings of the owners of the swine, the local populace, would be stirred up against Christ, and Christ would be forced to leave. So their desire to go into the swine was against Jesus Christ. And so it happened that when the keepers of the swine told their terrifying story about the stampeding berserk herd of swine committing suicide in the Lake of Galilee, the owners came and found the man clothed and in his right mind sitting at the feet of Jesus. Rather than acknowledging that a wonderful miracle had occurred, these owners besought Christ that he would leave their territory. Isn't it amazing the points of view mankind can have? Rather than rejoicing at somebody in whose life the power of Satan had been broken, they thought more of their shekels and the loss that they had sustained. In the first place, they oughtn't to have been herding swine. These were unclean animals, and no farmer in that area should have raised swine. But in spite of that fact, they still tried to make money by raising swine contrary to the law. Mark then tells the story about Jesus' attitude towards this man, who wanted to be a follower of Christ. But the Savior told him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what God has done for you." This is the testimony that all of us can fulfill. God doesn't require us to give Bible studies often, but he does require us to testify to what he has done in our lives. The blessings he has given, the victories he has imparted, the love he has demonstrated, the care he has bestowed across the decades, all these constitute the testimony that we should bear witness to our friends. Before we start witnessing, the people to whom we witness ought to become our friends. And so he went through the whole country telling them what Christ had done for him, and as a result, when Jesus passed by again, many people came to listen to him. The third part in our study covers the story of the ruler of the synagogue, Jairus, and his sick little girl, lying at the point of death. The gospel writers pick up individuals like this. In fact, if we make a list of all Christ's personal interviews, we will get about 36 named and unnamed persons to whom he ministered personally, with all kinds of personal problems. Here was a ruler who had tried everything he could to help his little girl, to no avail. And then he hears about the healing physician from Nazareth, the humble carpenter, the Galilean who has done so many wonderful things. Hope is awakened in his heart, and he sets out from his home to find Jesus Christ. Now, as the gospel writers tell the story, they do so in a very wonderful way. Christ immediately agrees with the ruler that he will come home with him and do what he can. Makes no promise, but starts out on the homeward way. He didn't treat him like the centurion, to whom he said, "You go, it'll be according to your word." He didn't do it by long-distance therapy, as he might have. He decided to come. And there were so many people in the crowd that Christ's progress was very slow. And the ruler's patience and faith was thus tested. Was he still going to believe? Was he going to become disgusted and angry and go away? The fourth part that deals with Christ's healing of the woman is interposed with the story of Jairus. As Christ was going through the crowds slowly, a woman who had been sick for 12 years, who was now in the state of abject poverty because all her living had been given to physicians, had not got any better, was growing steadily weaker. She had heard about Jesus, and she said to herself, "If I can but touch him, I will be healed." So Jesus is going with Jairus to take care of Jairus' daughter. This woman is trying to get to Christ through the milling multitudes that divide her from him. Christ knows all this. And as he wanders through the crowd, he deliberately sets his course so that he will come close to the woman. She says, "If I can but touch him, I am going to be healed." And so he comes, close enough. A gust of wind picks up his garment, her fingers caress its hem, and she is healed. Now Jesus stops. "Who touched me?" Peter and the other disciples said, "Lord, everyone is touching you." "Oh no, this touch is a touch of love and faith and healing." And when the woman couldn't be hid, she fell at his feet and confessed all. And Jesus sent her on her way, rejoicing. And then he takes up the story of the ruler of the synagogue and his dying daughter. Eventually, Jesus Christ reaches Jairus' home and finds the mourners already proclaiming to the neighborhood that the little girl is dead. Jesus pushes them out with the word, "The damsel is not dead, but sleeping." And in the middle of guffaws of incredulous laughter, with Peter, James, and John, and the parents of the child, the door is locked. Prayer is lifted to heaven. Jesus Christ takes the little girl by the hand, and she arose with life and health and strength. We notice these four stories. The power of the tempest to destroy Christ. The power of the devil to overrun Christ. The power of disease and death to defy Christ. In spite of all these attempts at the adversary to discredit, to slay, Jesus Christ triumphs. He is tested in many ways. Satan would destroy him by the storm on Galilee. Satan would tear him to pieces by the demoniac of Gadara. Satan would make a fool of him by presenting him with chronic cases of sickness and with death. But Jesus Christ moves through all these circumstances unafraid. Trusting in the power of God, he does what God has asked him to do. And as we think of the application of this lesson to ourselves, what tempests and storms are raging round us? What demons seem to meet us on our pathway? What sickness saps our strength? What death of dear ones defies our faith in God? If we will allow the meaning of these episodes in the life of Jesus Christ, his question will become much more powerful to us. Why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith? And our prayer should be, Lord, increase our faith.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.